to live righteously.
Hey, it's me, Richie T, and it's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. In the second and third block, we talk with Kevin Kloosterman, who is a former LDS bishop. He's a member of the church who is an LGBTQ advocate and has some pretty interesting stories to talk about. So we talk with him in the second and third block. All right, so I got some emails I want to share with you before we get this thing started. Number one, this came in at theculturalhall.com. Says, hello, Richard. Says, I am Joseph Atkins, webmaster and editor of the Gay Dating Blog. Our blog focuses on providing free resources to the gay and lesbian community. We just recently updated our list of the top 100 LGBT Facebook pages, and I thought you and your site might be interested in checking it out. If you do find this list to be a good resource, might you be able to link it from your blog or give it a like on Facebook? Let me know if you have any questions or comments. Thank you, Joseph. Thanks, Joseph. If that is a real person, I love that email. And yes, I understand that it's spam, everyone. You don't need to send me emails about that. I just thought it was funny spam, so I figured I'd pass that along. This one from Jeremy says, hello, everyone. I wanted to say how much better your show keeps getting. I'm trying to avoid getting involved in a discussion about Kate Kelly, but as soon as anyone I know finds out that I'm LDS, it's almost unavoidable. I have a female friend who's been investigating the church, and I thought that this would chase her away, but it has not done so yet. She did, however, bring up a point that I might share with you. There are many in ordained women, Miss Kelly included, who say they still believe strongly in the teachings of the church and that we are taught to ask questions about our faith. How do we think the group would react if the church were to put out a statement that said, we prayed for an answer and we were told that it wasn't the right time, or what if the answer was just no? Do we think a member of the First Presidency saying, we listened to you and asked the question, but the revelation we received was not what you hoped it would be something that they would listen to? I thought it was an interesting question. Keep up the good work, and hopefully I will be able to make it to your live broadcast on July 14th down at Sammy's in Provo. By the way, Richie, Natalie Hill is not dating the assistant coach of the Jazz anymore. They got engaged the day after your interview was released. So congratulations to Natalie Hill. That's a former episode of the Cultural Hall. A couple of emails that I'll compile together from Michelle says, hello, Richie, I love you as always, but this email is about DJ Rob. By the way, I just found out that Rob is a DJ. That's awesome. Rob, I wanted to let you know that there are a lot of DJ Rob haters out there, but I am a DJ Rob lover. All kidding aside, I really enjoy the show whenever you are a part of it. I like that you aren't just another yes, sir, and that you have your own thoughts, and whether they are liberal or not, it doesn't matter. You bring a lot to the Cultural Hall, and I just want you to know that there is a DJ Rob lover out there, and just ignore the haters, which I know you do. Then she says, I have a couple of questions. First question is about the get-together on the 14th of July. That's going to be at Sammy's Pie Shakes in Provo, to answer your question. The info is now on Facebook, and we'll put a link on our website, theculturalhall.com. Also, she says, I wanted to know if I am able to download older episodes to my Android device. I have a Samsung S4 and want to be able to listen to them. So here's an email reminding you about. As far as I am aware, Michelle, you can listen to old episodes and be able to download them. Just go to theculturalhall.com, go to the Listen Now tab, scroll back, and then there's a download option with each and every episode. Let's see if there's another one from Michelle that I can lump in as part of all one big email. Yeah, there is. Here we go. Oh, Richie, she says, so often I can keep quiet. I know I put in my two cents often enough, but this time I just can't. I love you and the show and all, but Brother Kyle has fallen down a few rungs on the ladder of awesomeness that is the Cultural Hall. I just finished listening to the articles of news from June the 30th, and I just have to say how disappointed I am in Brother Kyle. I'm pretty sure that I am not the only one, says Michelle. Not only was he offensive in referring to the Osmond family, people that a lot of us grew up with and revere in many ways, but he went further than that. He was offensive to the hearing impaired. It doesn't matter if they listen or not. His comments were out of line, and also to the brothers Osmond, George and Tom. Contrary to what Brother Kyle thinks, they are only two of the nine Osmond family members, and they were born deaf, not half of the family. The comments were also offensive in that Jimmy suffered a stroke in 2004, which is what I thought Brother Kyle was originally referring to before he made the deaf comment. Brother Kyle, I would ask that you think of yourself and your own family before making such comments in the future. Usually I am a fan, and I was sadly disappointed in you in this episode. Maybe it would have been better if there had been some estrogen in the room. Just a thought. I do appreciate all of you, and I hope to not hear Brother Kyle being so offensive in the future. I look forward to seeing as many of you as possible on July the 14th at Sammy's in Provo. Keep up the great most of the time show. So yeah, that was an all dude show, and I don't think we'll do that again because all dudes turned out to be not a great show. This one is from Michael. Richie, I forgot to ask you this, but you have teased having an interview with John, by the way, a couple of times on the show. My friends and I were essentially John, by the way, groupies in high school and would travel around to any steak fireside in the Valley when we heard that he was going to be speaking. When are you going to have an interview with him? Answer, Michael, soon. That'll happen soon. Then this from Angela, and then we'll go ahead and get started. This is from Angela. She wrote in at theculturalhall.com. A reminder, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/theculturalhall. You can find us on Twitter at theculturalhall. We're on Pinterest, and you can find us on Google+. That's a thing. And then always, as always, theculturalhall.com. Angela writes, misrepresentation from ordained women, that's the subject line, says, it would be nice if the people from ordained women would do their homework and not talk about things that they know nothing about, especially when they're trying to pass things off as truth. The catalyst for anyone non-white receiving the priesthood, particularly people of African descent, had nothing to do with social pressure from different advocacy groups and everything to do with Brazil. Brazil was a newly opened country to missionaries, and people were rapidly joining the church, large numbers of which were African descent. These people were getting patriarchal blessings, and the church started getting very panicked phone calls from patriarchs across the country. These patriarchs were giving the blessing they felt inspired to give, saying things that they were inspired to say. In these blessings, men of African descent were promised not only that they would hold the priesthood, but that they would enjoy the blessings of the temple. As I said, these patriarchs were panicked because the priesthood was unavailable to men of African descent at that time. It was at this point church officials decided that it was time to address the issue. Since these blessings were inspired by God, my dad, for 30 years, worked alongside men, leaders in the LDS Church, who were there and involved in this particular revelation when it came. He speaks of it as being described to him as the most spiritual experience these men were able to participate in. So again, I would stress that this change did not come as a result of social pressure. However, it does continue to show that the way these women continue to misrepresent the LDS Church. Also, in your interviews with these women, it would be interesting to ask them if they really feel they are being inspired by the right source and not being misguided by another source that can be very deceiving, continuing until they get the answer not to. Where is that answer really coming from? And is it really their place to be pushing for this? They feel they're supposed to be pushing for this, but isn't that outside the line of a priesthood authority? How is it that they feel they're supposed to be pursuing this when they should, when really shouldn't it be the leaders of the church receiving that prompting? Anyways, sorry for my rambling. It would be nice if you pointed these things out. Also, peanut butter is a great thing to use for mousetraps. They love it, and it's harder for them to grab and run because it's sticky. So there you go. That's emails. You can email me always, theculturalhall.com. Contact us or Richie at theculturalhall. It's time for episode 134. It's Kevin Klusterman. It is another episode here of The Cultural Hall.
Looking for a change in your workout? Are you looking for real results? Pure Bar is the fastest, most effective, yet safest way to transform your body. In just 55 minutes, you will achieve a full body workout on the areas women struggle with the most: hips, seat, abs, and arms. The Pure Bar technique is low impact, protecting your joints by avoiding any bouncing or jumping. The technique works to defy gravity by tapering everything in and lifting it up. Come check out Pure Bar today in Draper at 123rd South and 200 East, just 3 blocks east of the freeway. Your first class is free and there's no obligation. Mention that you heard this ad on Cultural Hall and take 10% off any class package. Give us a call at 801-523-6215 or visit us online at www.purebar.com. That's PUREBARRE.com and select the Draper, Utah location. Pure Bar, lift, tone, burn.
We invite you to claim your courage by shedding shameful thoughts, actions, and feelings that disrupt your ability to live authentically or feel connected to others by letting go of fear, blame, and your idea of perfection. The Healing Group, where women go for hope, growth, and healing. We're the home of the Sex Girls. Are you a mother feeling lost in a relationship and feeling stuck? Are you feeling overwhelmed by life? Schedule an appointment now. Can't make it to our office? No problem. Meet with a therapist individually or with a group in our virtual clinic right from the comfort of your own home. Visit thehealinggroup.com for more information.
It's time for the second block of the Cultural Hall, and on the phone with me, if I'm correct, it's Illinois. Is that right, Kevin?
That is correct, Richie. I'm in Illinois, northern Illinois.
Do you say Illinois?
No, that's forbidden.
That is a forbidden thing, even for us western folks to say Illinois? Forbidden?
That is against the commandments. It is not acceptable. You must use the proper term. You cannot say Illinois. We will get annoyed.
How about Illinois? Can we say that?
No, we are not in Quebec.
Oh, okay.
So using that French phrasing will not be appropriate either. You must say Illinois.
So what you're saying is it's the one way that you designate it or we're out. Is that what you're saying?
That's true.
Okay.
There is only a straight and narrow path towards pronouncing the state's name.
It's former Bishop Kevin Kloosterman. Thank you for joining me here in the Cultural Hall. How is weather in Illinois today? Well,
the Illinois weather is we had a little bit of a rain shower here. It's been a fairly mild summer so far. Not too hot, not too cold. So we're kind of hitting that Goldilocks zone. The corn is starting to grow. It's about, I would say, knee high.
Uh-huh.
So, things are pleasant here in Illinois.
Now, if the name Kevin Kloosterman sounds familiar to you, it could be for any number of reasons. But most recently, he is quoted in the New York Times article talking about online comments putting members of the church at risk. But let's get to know you a little bit, Kevin. Tell me, are you a convert to the church? Are you a lifer, pioneer stock? Give me an idea where you come from.
On my mom's side, I'm a lifer. I'm from pioneer stock. My mother's maiden name was Levitt, so that should give you some idea of how far back it goes. So definitely joining the church around the Kirtland era. And making the journey to Nauvoo, Illinois, and then going with Brother Brigham into the Salt Lake Valley. And then during the time of President John Taylor, part of the Levitt family colonized southern Alberta. And I'm originally from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. So for those who don't know where that is, just keep driving up north I-15, and you'll get up there.
And you'll get right to it.
You'll get right to it.
So were you raised then in Canada?
I was born and raised in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I attended BYU.
I've heard of that school.
In Provo.
Uh-huh. There's not a BYU Canada, huh?
There currently is not a BYU Calgary or a BYU Alberta,
mm-hmm.
But that would be a good place to put a BYU, I think.
Are there a lot of Mormon folk up in that area?
There's tons. They're multiplying and replenishing Western Canada.
And so you came to BYU. What'd you study at BYU?
Well, I was very when I initially came, I grew up in a very conservative Orthodox LDS home, very conservative theologically and very conservative politically. And so one of my favorite shows, I came to BYU in 1988.
Okay.
As a freshman. And one of my favorite shows was Family Ties, and I loved Alex Keaton. And, you know, I had heard when he went to college that he was going to major in political science and economics. He was going to have a double major, and so that's what I wanted to do. And then I took economics, and I was like, I don't like all these graphs. I don't like doing this stuff. I liked the philosophical part, but I didn't like actually doing the equations,
uh-huh.
You know?
Uh-huh.
So, anyways, I ended up studying family sciences and going into marriage and family therapy, and I work as a mental health professional now. I got my master's degree at Northern Illinois University.
Okay.
But, yeah, that's what happened. And, you know, met a cute American girl at BYU, and
Wait a minute. That happens?
Yeah, apparently that happens a lot.
This is the first that I'm hearing of it, Kevin.
You know, and we're like part of the 2% crowd. So, you know, back in the day when, you know, the missionary ages weren't quite in sync or alignment between men and women, you know, to go on your mission and then to come back and actually have your girlfriend be there when you get back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, that's pretty rare.
So she waited. So she's pretty saintly then.
To both wait and marry me.
Yeah.
You know?
I was hoping you'd overlook that was what I was saying, but no, you got it. You got exactly what I meant.
No, I think we would all agree. Those who know me best and know her best know how that worked out, and you described it quite well.
Where did you serve your mission?
I served my mission initially in Japan, but had a lot of health problems over there. I was in the hospital for a lot of GI problems, maybe some bad sushi or something like that. So I had to come home, have some tests done, get some treatment, and then they didn't really want to send me back, you know, because they were concerned about my health. So they reassigned me to Eastern Canada in Nova Scotia, and that's where I completed and finished my mission, and then went back to BYU.
What was that experience like for you coming home from your mission? A lot of people will describe that as really mentally challenging.
Oh, it was horrendous, you know. And for me, it was devastating. It was, you know, because our culture almost sees this as a rite of passage. And you know, something that you must do, and if it goes wrong in any way, the guilt and the shame, and you know, even though it's a physical health issue, or you know, for some people it might be a mental health issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard. It's really, really difficult. I had a great, great mission president in Japan who was very wise, very understanding, helped me with the transition, you know, wrote letters. There wasn't email in that day, so wrote, you know, I still have these letters from Japan that he sent to my parents, and, you know, he was just unbelievable. So that helped with the transition, but even with all that, it was still pretty difficult and pretty challenging. So I can really understand, and I'm glad we're talking about it as a faith community, how to help individuals who may have to come home early for whatever reason, and help them to you know, feel good about themselves and move forward with that transition.
And I think it's and we'll get into this in many areas, I hope, during the time that we talk today. But I think it's just a social awareness of other people, a Christian outlook for everybody in the fold, because there are groups now where there weren't even, you know, I think it's tomorrow or sometime this week that I celebrate 13 years coming home, that even 13 years ago, there wasn't that support for people who may have had to come home either for physical or mental illness, or just who came home because they were like, not the thing that I thought that this was, and I need to not be here.
Right, right. Or, you know, they did something before they left and it wasn't quote unquote dealt with. You know, I mean, the guilt and the shame is just enormous if you come back. So I'm glad there's more supports out there. There's probably more that we can do. But, you know, we really need to recognize how vulnerable missionaries are, and how difficult it is, and how much, you know, pressure is on missionaries and all that stuff. So, yeah. Yeah,
I want to let's breeze through some of this too. So you get done at BYU, you get your master's in Northern Illinois, then you start practicing as a mental health counselor.
Yeah, yeah. I work at a hospital, so I've been there since my internship. Really, they decided to hire me, and it was kind of interesting because Stacy, my wife.
Sister Stacy, then can we please call her? I'm just kidding.
After I graduated with my master's, we were like, we could go anywhere. We could go anywhere in the States. We could go anywhere in Canada. We could just go anywhere. And then my internship said, hey, we'd like to hire you. And I was like, okay.
You're like, we could go here.
We're
already
stay here.
And we
and
don't
this is
have
where
to
we've
move.
Been for, you know, like 17 years or longer. So, I work at a hospital. I've worked in a variety of areas. I've worked inpatient. I've worked outpatient. I've worked family therapy. I've worked straight, you know, mental health. Done a little bit of chemical dependency. Worked with adolescents and their families. I currently work with adults. Lots of experience in the mental health area.
Do you have kids?
And, yes. Yeah, we have three kids. They're wonderful. They're adorable. I have a daughter who will be turning 17 in July.
Oh, my gosh.
And then two sons. And all three of them are very, very different. And but you know how things roll with me. I appreciate the diversity.
You made the mention that your home, very conservative, very conservative. I don't remember the exact terminology you did, but you spelled it out so that I took notice of it. How would you say you run your household?
Well, I am much more, shall we say, liberal in my approach politically and probably also more moderate, theologically. I mean, we have family home evening, we have scripture study, we have family prayer, we do all those things that a lot of LDS folks think are important to do. And so we enjoy doing that, and that's important to us. In my home growing up, you know, all the books, you know, the books that lined the bookshelf were McConkie and, you know, Joseph Fielding Smith and, Skousen and, you know, some of these other, you know, kind of leaning more towards the conservative side of the spectrum theologically. But, you know, now in my home, you'll see some books by, you know, Joanna Brooks.
What the? Now, a previous guest here in the Cultural Hall, Joanna Brooks.
Oh, Joanna. Yeah, I think I heard that episode. So she's someone who really has had, and I don't even know if I should say this, I don't know who's monitoring it, but she's had an influence. I don't want to get her into trouble, but she's definitely had an influence on my thinking because I used to think that feminists were, pretty much satanic.
I want to get in on that later, and so hopefully we will, but the being monitored and listening and all that stuff, I want to get into that, but not quite yet. So help me remember that we're going to get there.
I just thought that I'd give a little appetizer for that, you know.
Well, num 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 num. So your family, you know, you're an LDS guy. You get called to be a bishop in 2006, is that right?
2007, late 2007, just right in time for tithing settlement.
Oh, geez. Let me ask you this. The call to be a bishop to me sounds as I think about it, and we've had a stake split and the ward split and stuff like that. And I think I've ensured myself to not ever have to have that calling. It just seems like an intimidating, heavy, thankless, awesome, terrifying responsibility.
Yeah, it's all of those things. There's no question about it. It is a mixture of all those things. We had a friend in our ward who would oftentimes make a joke that four or five years started to roll around, he'd bring a cup of coffee into the chapel and sit on the front row, you know, just to kind of prevent. And, you know, it was tongue in cheek. You know, he didn't really do that.
Sure.
It wasn't literal. But, you know, it's no person that I know of would. It's not something that you say, oh, man, I really, really want to be the bishop. You know, I really want that for myself. You know, you know going in that it's going to change your life. You know that it's going to be just an overwhelming experience. And there's great positives that go along with it, and there's great challenges. And it really... you know, and I think most bishops, it's, you know, you walk past a former bishop in the hallway, or a current bishop. Like we have two wards in our building, and, you know, I'd walk past the other bishop, and I'd kind of just, we'd both have this look in our eye like, yeah, I know what you're going through, buddy. I know what you're going through. And, so yeah, it's all those things. It's a wonderful thing to be able to just look out at the faces of your ward, and to love your ward, and to, you know, just get to know all the ward members. And, you know, they all have different strengths and different talents and just different personalities
and weaknesses too, I imagine too.
Absolutely.
And some of that you have to deal with.
Absolutely. And you have to figure out how do you keep this ward together? How do you keep it going? How do you try to help a really diverse group of people in the ward? And, you know, that's always a challenge because, you know, they all come with different beliefs and different cultures and different experiences. And, you know, you have to try to be wise. You know, and you're a volunteer. This is, you know, you're not, this is not your job. And you know, you come in and, you know, you're working on this type of stuff. It's almost like a full-time job in addition to your, you know, full-time employment. So it's hard. But it really was one of the most rewarding things I've done. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done.
In 2011, you got yourself into some trouble. You want to talk about that?
Yeah. A little bit of trouble.
Can we get into it?
Yeah. So around that time, I had been starting to.
This is while you're still serving as a bishop.
This is while I'm still serving as a bishop. I'm starting to look into LGBT issues for a number of reasons. And starting to educate myself on what's going on with this, you know, why, what happened with, you know, Proposition 8, you know, why is there so much attention being placed to this? You know, so I started digging in, I started reading some blogs, started educating myself. And I watched this show called Queer Eye for the Straight Guy.
Sure.
Never seen it before. And I'm like, wow, this is a great show. I love this show. I love these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think when, you know, growing up very conservative and Orthodox, you kind of, for me, growing up, and, you know, as a teenager in the 80s, so, you know, there was a different perception of people who were gay, you know, during that time. I mean, you look at some John Hughes films, and they're using, you know, gay slurs in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how the culture was, the broader culture, not just Mormon culture, but the broader culture was at that time. And so I, you know, I had a really big learning curve, and so I saw Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, and it just kind of dawned on me. I'm like, these guys are just regular guys. These guys are just like me and anyone else. They don't want to hurt my family. They don't want to hurt my marriage. You know, they're just good guys, you know. And so I started to kind of think about, man, wouldn't it be cool if those Queer Eye guys came to, like, a Mormon bishop's house? And I'd start thinking about this stuff, and how, you know, and what they do. And have you ever watched the show? Have you ever seen that show?
Yeah, it's
fun. You know, I mean, they just trash the place. I mean, they go through everything, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, what if Carson is going through, you know, our laundry and stuff like that and, you know, the drawers and, you know, and we all know what's in Orthodox LDS Mormons, you know, drawers.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm just thinking about all this stuff, and I'm like, man, I don't know if that would work or not. But really what it did is it started to humanize people who were gay for me. And you know, when you don't have friends or you don't have family members who are out and gay, it's hard to understand. It's hard to empathize. You know, you have the church's teachings. You have the broader kind of cultural, you know, misunderstandings. And you kind of just roll with that because you don't have any other experience otherwise. So that show kind of helped me to humanize gay folks. And so I started digging in, just, you know, learning more about it. And you know, some of the stories and some of the blogs I started reading were just so painful. And I read Carolyn Pearson's book, No More Goodbyes, and I read about Stuart Mattis and his suicide, you know, at his stake center.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just realizing how vulnerable LGBT folks are to discrimination and hate and misunderstanding and fear and, you know, this belief that you know, this is something, you know, being gay is something that someone just wakes up one day and says, oh, I think I'll choose to be gay. And, you know, that false belief that this is something that people choose, I mean, and what it led to was this fear, well, man, if someone can choose to be gay, then maybe I'll choose to be gay, and then other people will choose to be gay, and then the whole human population will die out, you know. And these were real fears of people,
mm-hmm.
and they still exist today.
Sure.
So, you know, just those misunderstandings, and my heart just started breaking. I remember I was reading Carolyn Pearson's book, and just some of these painful stories. And I threw it across the room. I couldn't even deal with it. And then it was the summer of 2011. There were three separate violent attacks on gay men in Utah that summer. And that was kind of the turning point for me. And that's when I said, that's it. I'm getting off the fence here. I'm gonna start standing up. I'm gonna start speaking out. I'm gonna start saying, "Hey, things need to change here. This is unacceptable." And you know, also hearing about how gay Mormon kids, LGBT Mormon kids, were getting kicked out of their homes.
Sure. And Utah has a higher than the national average of young teenage men and women that are homeless. And a lot of that is because it got so bad at home that they, you know, either left and then weren't allowed to come back home or were kicked out.
Yeah. And that's just completely, completely unacceptable. So I said, I've got to stand up. You know, I've really, really got to stand up. And so I started trying to figure out, you know, what do I do, you know? And so, you know, I had heard about John DeLynn and, you know, some of his podcasts. And so, you know, I said, hey, I want to go on, you know, your podcast, your Mormon Stories podcast, and I want to start speaking about this stuff. I want to be an LGBT ally. You know, he says, well, hey, as a matter of fact, we've got this Circle the Wagons conference, you know, and Carolyn Pearson is coming. And have you heard about it? And I'm like, no, you know, and he's like, yeah, you know, you should come to that. And And so I said, okay, you know, and so I told my wife, I'm flying out to Salt Lake, and I'm going to go to this conference, and they asked me to conduct some of the meetings, and, you know, so I started, speaking out there, and then the Sunday, they were doing an interfaith service, and I hadn't planned to go to it, but... then John and some of the organizers came to me and said, hey, you know, we were going to try to get a member of the 70 or somebody from the church to speak at this interfaith, gathering, and nobody, you know, is willing to do it or wants to do it. You know, you're a Mormon bishop. Would you be willing to, you know, speak at this interfaith gathering as kind of the final part of the conference, the Circle the Wagons conference? And, you know, I was like, man, I don't know. And because I was going to, you know, meet with some friends, and I hadn't planned on going to that part.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said to myself, you know, there's going to be gay Mormons there and LGBT LDS folks. And, you know, they're going to hear from an Episcopalian pastor and a Methodist pastor, and there's not going to be a Mormon there. I said, I got to do this. I want somebody who's a member of our faith to be able to be there and to say something. So I ended up going, and I, you know, worked on my talk, and then, you know, one of the other organizers said, hey, this is, you know, I went to the interfaith meeting, and he said, you know, this is going to be the topic for what we're talking about, and it didn't align with my talk at all that I had prepared. And as a bishop, and if you've ever been in leadership, you remember President Packer saying, you prepare, and then you chuck your notes.
Mm-hmm.
You throw out your notes. So if you can imagine me kind of channeling President Packer here at this LGBT conference, and I'm throwing out my notes, and I'm just speaking off the cuff, and, you know, I was told, you know, a couple days before that there weren't really going to be any reporters there because they were, quote, all gayed out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the issue had been oversaturated. So, you know, I was like, okay, you know, whatever. And so anyways, there happened to be a reporter there at this thing. And, you know, I said my thing. I said, you know, I'm sorry. I apologized. I said, I can't say anything on behalf of the church, but for myself, you know, I haven't been as Christ-like as I could be about these issues. I really hadn't done my homework about these issues. I've been learning about it, and I'm sorry, and I'm going to try to make things better. I think straight people need to make things better and change their attitudes and change how they look at gay people and LGBT, you know, Q folks. And you know, I said how they've been treated is an atrocity. And so anyways, you know, I left, and, you know, everybody was like, oh, that's good talk. And I said, thanks. And then went to a gathering with some friends, and then somebody pulled up the internet, Salt Lake Tribune, and they said, well, it's been nice knowing you. You're going to get excommunicated. And because the headline was, Mormon bishop accuses LDS church of atrocities. And they had a quote in there of, you know, that I didn't say. So they had to, like, you know, the Salt Lake Tribune had to run a correction on it, and they changed it a bit. But it created this big firestorm, and it, you know, received, you know, a lot of media attention that I just, you know, totally wasn't expecting. And, you know, you come home after that, and your stake president is like, what is going on? You know, oh my gosh, what is going on? And my wife was like, what have you done to our life? You know, like, you know, trying to do the right thing and stand up and, you know, try to change things. And it's like, you know, there's this website that, you know, went up that, you know, said excommunicate Kevin Kloosterman, you know, and it started, you know, talking about blood atonement and, you know, this guy needs to be excommunicated. And this guy put down, like, my address, my phone number, where I worked, my wife's name, my children's names, and he's talking about blood atonement and stuff, and I'm like, oh my gosh, what have I done? And I show my coworkers this, and they're like, you've got to go to the police, you know? And so I'm going to the police, and I'm saying, you know, I'm trying to explain what blood atonement is, you know? And
you're like, listen, Sergeant, okay, so blood atonement, I don't know how long you have, but I should probably explain what blood atonement is. Let's start with, you know, we all believe in God. Let's start there. And then, you know, you're meanwhile teaching him the six discussions.
God has a plan for us.
Exactly.
And we lived with him, you know, before we, you know, just go through the plan of salvation to start off with.
There was an apostasy, Sergeant. And so what we feel like had to happen.
And Brigham Young was out in the desert, you know, and it was kind of this thing where, you know, it was like religious, but it was kind of like political too. And, you know, he governed things and it's kind of like the death penalty, but, you know, we don't really do that, you know. And, oh my gosh, I was just in this state of like, what, you know, what have I done, you know. And you know, it was hard. It was really hard on my wife. It was, you know, I'm sure my stake president thought I was crazy. It was during the Mitt Romney campaign, you know, right in the middle of that. And, you know, some people have told me in retrospect, they're like, you know, you're kind of lucky it came, you know, this happened during the Mitt Romney campaign. Otherwise, you know, they would have released you probably on the spot, you know, for doing that. And so, yeah, that's what happened in just a really brief nutshell. And that's actually how I came in contact with Joanna Brooks, because when the story broke, she, you know, she called me and she, you know, she did an interview with me over the phone, and I'm just shaking. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I'm coming home. I'm getting excommunicated. And, you know, so she, you know, sort of brought out the details and the nuances and, you know, what I meant and, you know, just clarified the story. So I call her my feminist Good Samaritan. And, you know, she helped me when I got robbed of a little bit of context there. Go ahead.
Let's come back in the third block and we'll talk a little bit about the consequences and kind of life post the circling the wagons.
Okay.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Hey, this is Dan, the Laptop Man from PC Laptops. I'm so excited. It only happens once a year. It's time for the annual PC Laptops Super Spring Blowout Sale with up to 50% off the original prices on desktop and laptop computers. We have demos, scratch and dents, and trade-ins. Right now, buy any new PC Laptops computer and get a free multi-pass. That's a full three-day pass to Salt Lake Comic-Con Fan Experience, April 17th. Through 19th at the Salt Palace, while supplies last. And to make it extra easy, we're doing no interest if paid in full within 12 months. OAC, so please visit us at any one of our 8 locations right now or call us at 1-877-596-SAVE or check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com. At PC Laptops, we really love you. That's PCLaptops.com.
It's the third block of the cultural hall, not cultural hall. That's a whole different kind of accent.
That's what we call a Freudian slip there, Richie, yeah, in the mental health field.
Watch yourself. It's Kevin Klosterman. He was a bishop of the LDS Church 2007 through 2012. Infamous or famous, depending on how you want to consider him, for giving a talk at the Circle of the Wagons in the fall of 2011, wherein he said, you know what, we need to treat gay brothers and sisters and gay people in general, or I guess we should be completely correct, LGBTQ folks, better, more Christian. You come home from this thing, and your wife's like, what have you done? Is she pretty supportive of you? Is she surprised to hear that this is happening to you? Is she like, oh, he's just misunderstood? Or was it actual some tension between the two of you?
I think it's been hard for her. You know, I don't think she really signed up to be the wife of an activist.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's a very, very private person. Mm-hmm. And she does not like conflict. And, you know, I think when all of this stuff started to blow up, it was kind of traumatizing for her and our family. And, you know, she's used to it a little bit more now. And, you know, she knows that this is so, so important to me. Because I think it's, you know, as a mental health professional, knowing how vulnerable LGBT people are to suicide and knowing that family rejection basically can, you're almost handing your LGBT child the gun that they could use to take their own life. Mm-hmm. When you reject them. We know that from research from Dr. Caitlin Ryan and the Family Acceptance Project. So this is so important to me, and she understands that, you know, a little bit more now. I have to take breaks from activism to, you know, just take care of my family, of course, and you know, make sure that I'm having good balance in my life.
I feel like even if you don't agree with homosexuality, and certainly the church, you know, says we still believe to participate in homosexual activities is a sin. I still think that you can look at it and be like, if you can take the gospel at its purest, which is everyone is a son or daughter of God, and be able to look at it from that perspective, right? You wouldn't want your son or daughter to kill themselves or to live a more difficult life because of the way that other people treated them, regardless of if it's gay or if they're tall or if they're short or if they weigh too much or if, you know, all these things that they don't necessarily choose for themselves. And I think it goes back to that, you know, that these things aren't choices.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and if you can try to get to that empathy and compassion level that the gospel teaches us for others, then you can start to feel it and understand it. The problem is that when it doesn't affect you, and it, you know, this doesn't happen to every family,
mm-hmm.
But it happens to a lot of families. But when it doesn't happen to you or it's not affecting you, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. And mm-hmm. It's like, well, that's those people. And, you know, some people are born alcoholics, and, you know, some people are going to be single their whole lives, and that's that. And, you know, they just need to deal with it. And that's the way it goes. And that's how life is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people aren't quite able to get to that empathy and compassion and understanding. And, you know, you don't talk to, you may not talk to somebody who's LGBT, or you may feel uncomfortable doing that. And so there's some barriers there, but I really do. I love what you said, the gospel at its most purest point really tries to help us transcend those barriers.
So you're a big troublemaker in 2011, and then you get released from being a bishop in 2012. Are they related?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's the question my wife asked the stake president when he came over to talk with us in March of 2012.
Because as I do my quick math, that's 5 years, which is typically a bishop's time.
Right. I served for 4 years and 4 months. So you know, that's...
So what do you think, Kevin?
So what he said was, you know, he said bishops serve, you know, between 3 to 5 years. And he said that a release is always done through revelation. And my wife asked him specifically, she said, you know, are you releasing Kevin because of his talk at Circle the Wagons in November? And he said no.
Well, great. That's good.
So that was good, you know. And you know, I have to say my stake president, as, you know, I mean, he's certainly not where I'm at on these issues. But, you know, he's always been civil to me and kind and, you know, understanding and has really done a good job of handling, you know, a pretty explosive situation. You know, when this all came out and he talked to me and he said, hey, what's going on here, you know, he handled it in a very, very wise and good way. So he's done a great job.
All right, let's fast forward a little bit because you don't stay out of, quote, trouble.
Right. So after I got released, I, you know, kind of accelerated some of my activism. So for me, and this is just for me, I don't feel I can totally be an LGBT ally if I don't, you know, support the same civil rights for them as I would want for myself. That's just a personal political belief. I feel that I have to support, you know, their civil and human rights. And
you're talking about gay marriage.
I'm talking about gay marriage. I'm also talking about employment and housing.
Okay.
Which the church supported the Salt Lake City ordinance on housing and employment non-discrimination for gay folks, which was, you know, a pretty bold and unusual move for them to do. So, you know, there's a range of civil rights issues, but the hot button one, of course, is gay marriage. Mm-hmm. So I did, you know, I supported gay marriage at the time that I spoke at Circle the Wagons. That did not get into the papers. And it's probably, in some ways, that's probably a good thing because that would have created maybe even more controversy, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But after I was released, I did start lobbying for gay marriage in Illinois. I was invited by Equality Illinois, which is one of the groups that was, you know, working to have marriage equality in Illinois, and they asked me and some other people of faith to, you know, attend this lobbying day in Springfield. So I attended that, and, you know, there's pictures of me, and I'd blog about it, and, you know, I spoke with my legislators, state legislators in Illinois, and, you know, worked to try to promote marriage equality in Illinois, and, you know, eventually it passed here. So I was pretty happy about that because I believe we all deserve equal rights under the law, equal protection under the law, and due process under the law. So that's just my political point of view. And, you know, my thinking on it is that when President Monson first became the president of the church and he had that news conference and he had his two counselors with him at the time, he was asked by a reporter, by Peggy Fletcher Stack of the Salt Lake Tribune, you know, can you be a member of the church in good standing and support gay marriage? And he said, yes, as long as it's a political thing, as long as it's a political issue. So, you know, for me, when the president of the church, you know, says that, You know, that means something. And I know everybody would prefer that I not do that, but that's my political belief, is that we all deserve equality under the law.
So is that what got you in trouble?
Well, some people don't, some people don't agree. They think that you need to, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
That you can't have that political point of view and still be a member in good standing with the church. And so that's kind of what ended up happening, is eventually, my Twitter account and my Facebook account, where I, post, advocacy stuff and marriage equality stuff, was being watched and monitored. And I went to go renew my temple recommend in March of this year.
Of 2014. And,
right.
Okay.
And, my bishop said, we've been, monitoring your Facebook and your Twitter account. And, I don't feel comfortable with you having a temple recommend. And
gut punch.
Yeah. Yeah, if when you've grown up in the church and, you've been a bishop and, things like that, to be, denied a temple recommend is like, whoa, oh my gosh, it's a big, big, it's a big deal
mm-hmm.
for me. And so it was a gut punch, and it was really, really hard to hear. And he just, I told him, I said, this is what President Monson said, and he said, hey, if it's, his thing was, if it's not from General Conference or the Ensign, then it, it doesn't really count.
Mm-hmm.
And so he says, this is my judgment call. And also, on Twitter, we should brace your listeners for this. I congratulated the first married couple in Utah.
Oh, Seth and Michael.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who I know through kind of the blogosphere a little bit and things like that. So I congratulated them on Twitter, and my bishop said, Jesus would not congratulate a gay couple on Twitter.
Really?
Which has spawned this whole thing. Somebody was writing about this, that now people are saying, what would Jesus tweet?
Yeah. Jeez.
That's a good question, don't you think?
Sure, sure. Absolutely. WWJT.
That's right. What would Jesus tweet?
You know what is interesting, and I didn't know this until just recently, just kind of an aside. I hope his name is Michael. If it's not, I apologize to him. I know that one of the guys is Seth.
Yeah.
But both born and raised LDS and served missions, attended BYU.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, very fascinating as far as that goes. That's just sort of an aside, but it seems somewhat appropriate that the first gay married couple for the state of Utah is returned Mormon missionaries.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing, but obviously my bishop felt that I went too far.
Mm-hmm.
And, now I don't have a temple recommend. So,
was your wife with you?
No, she wasn't, because we were on different timelines for the expiration of our, mm-hmm. our temple recommends. So, I just went in thinking, okay, I'm just going to get my temple recommend renewed before we go on vacation here and get this taken care of, and yeah. I go in there and I'm like, oh my gosh, whoa,
which creates an awesome conversation for you and your wife.
Yes. Yeah. Because the temple for us, and I know different people have different kind of points of view about the temple, but for us personally, and as a couple, the temple is something that really, really strengthens us and is helpful for our marriage and is good for our marriage. And we enjoy attending when we can together. And, you know, and so that's been interrupted because of this. And so it's hard because my wife, of course, has, you know, mixed feelings about it. And, yeah, it's a really difficult situation right now.
Were there conditions given to you as where you could obtain a temple recommend again?
Well, you know, he kind of said that, and I love my bishop. I think he's a great guy. He's a good man, and I know what it's like to be bishop. It is so hard. It's hard to be in that judgment seat, and you know, I just, you know, my kids love him, and he's doing a good job. He's doing the best he can. You know, but he really didn't see a distinction between the political and the religious.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he's kind of saying to me, hey, you know, I said, hey, this is my political belief. This is, you know, constitutional. You know, we all deserve equality under the law and due process. And, you know, so he kind of said, well, you're going to need to choose between the temple and the Constitution.
Hmm. And have a good day.
So where do you go from there, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's hard, you know. And, you know, he let me know that I can appeal it to the stake president. And you know, I've thought about doing that. But there's just so much going on right now, as you well know. And there's so much the emotional intensity of what's going on is just unbelievable, and I really want to stay in the church. I want to stay in my faith. It's really important to me, and I'm just so concerned that more and more of these kind of hard, you know, hardcore measures and positions are going to be taken, that it's going to kind of start to push me further away. And so I'm reluctant to even have any more conversations, because I don't want to hear these positions anymore that seem, you know, somewhat hardcore and extreme, and I just get concerned about where things are going and you know, how they're affecting me now. You know, a lot of it's kind of a local situation, probably. Uh-huh. You know, who knows? Because I hear about other stake presidents who are, you know, doing firesides and reaching out to LGBT individuals and dialogue. Mm-hmm. And you know, there was a stake president out in, I think it was Oregon, who had a transgender person in his ward. And, you know, he started making contact with the first presidency, you know, this is what's going on and this is what we're doing, and we want to try to, you know, be Christ-like. And so there's a lot of good things happening out there. Mm-hmm. And the stake president got a human rights award from his community, which was just wonderful. But, you know, there's pockets where things are not going so well. Mm-hmm. and you know, that makes it really difficult and really hard. So it remains to be seen kind of what direction things will go, whether they will get better or will they go backwards and get worse. But, you know, I'm optimistic and hopeful of the long run that things will continue to get better and more inclusive and welcoming and safe wards and safe stakes and safe families for LGBT individuals. And, you know, but for me as an ally, it's pretty challenging right now.
Some would say, with things like Kate Kelly, with things like John DeLynn talking with you, there are other folks as well, that they would indicate that this would be the time of sifting the wheat from the tares.
Yeah. We all know that parable, you know, that if you do that too soon, you start destroying the wheat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I worry about, is that if local leaders or the church in general starts to think about disciplining our way out of these tough, difficult issues and questions in the 21st century, I just think that it could do a lot of damage to the church, a lot of damage to people. And, you know, I've had a lot of friends, unfortunately, who have left the church for a variety of issues. Some of them are women's issues. Some of them are, like feminist concerns. You know, some of them are historical issues. Some of them are LGBT issues. You know, lots of different things. And, you know, it's sad and it's hard to see people leave. But to take kind of this disciplinary approach during these challenging times, because this issue of feminism and this issue of gender equality and this issue of LGBT issues, those aren't going to go away.
Mm-mm.
You know, they're going to continue, and you know, if we try to discipline our way out of it, I don't know, I think it does a lot of damage in the process, and it does damage to those individuals, their families. I don't think it totally looks good for the church in some ways. So, we'll see what happens.
You said earlier, and now let's just get into it for a minute. You feel like you're being watched. Do you still feel like you're being watched?
Yeah, it's like that. It's like that Rockwell song from the '80s. Somebody's watching me. Mm. You know. I believe that they're looking at my Twitter account and my Facebook account.
Now, when you say they, you think local leaders?
Leaders, you know, I think, you know, some people know that there's a strengthening members committee that kind of looks for apostasy. I don't know if they're looking for issues on people's Twitter accounts, or, you know, and sending information to local leaders. I don't know. I don't have the answers to mm-hmm. that totally, but, you know, it used to be back in the day that, you know, if somebody was suspected of something like adultery, you know, they would do an investigation and they'd start parking their cars outside of people's homes and people's businesses to kind of follow them, and then the church finally said, "We don't want the bishops and stake presidents to do that." You know, yeah, it's a public place out there. You know, park in your car, but you know that's just creepy. You know,
yeah.
So they put in the handbook, you know, don't go around, you know, doing that. You know, even if it's in a public place, it's just not good or appropriate. You know, and so. You know, we're a young religion. This is new territory. It's the information age. It's the age of social media. So all these new things are coming at our faith community. And I don't think it's unprecedented what's kind of going on right now. So I have patience and compassion, you know, and understanding that this is really new territory. And I don't know how it's all going to, you know, come out, but I know that we're a young religion and we're going through some significant growing pains right now as we speak, you know, in front of the world. And I hope and pray that we can handle it appropriately and try to treat each other in a Christ-like way. And, you know, hopefully that's the end result.
A couple things real quick. Do you think people are watching me?
That's a good question. You know, it'd be interesting to know if some of the brethren have listened to your podcast,
mm-hmm.
to the Cultural Hall, you know.
Let's say hi to them. Hello, whoever might be listening.
Hello. Hello.
Hello
good
and welcome.
Good to have you aboard. This is the new media.
I only want to get into this very, very briefly. The excommunication of Kate Kelly. Thoughts?
Excommunication of Kate Kelly, my heart completely goes out to her. I think she is just an impressive individual, you know. And, you know, to me, you know, when I heard that she had been excommunicated, I was like, man, you would have thought that she had done something like truly horrendous, like, you know, pointing assault rifles at federal agents, you know, who were, you know, trying to confront her for being a deadbeat on land grazing fees and, you know, all the while, you know, saying racist comments and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would have thought that she would have done something horrendous like that. But, you know, I'm, you know, my heart goes out to her. I know she's, it's got to be extremely painful for her, extremely painful for her family. And I know she's trying to do the appeals process right now. You know, we'll see what happens with that. But, you know, she represents a portion of Mormon women. And, you know, it might be a small minority, but, you know, when it comes, no matter how many people are involved, you know, we all need to try to reach out to one another and treat each other in Christ-like ways and to use patience and long-suffering and love. And so I hope she's okay. I know she has a lot of support. And, you know, I think she's a really impressive person, a human rights attorney. This is somebody that we want to keep in the Mormon community. You know, whereas that, you know, little tongue-in-cheek joke that I made about, you know, the assault rifles on you know, government officials and racist comments,
mm-hmm.
you know, when people compare those two situations and see, well, here's someone that's not getting disciplined, and then over here, here's a woman who is saying, you know what, I think there needs to be more gender equality in the church. I'm a human rights attorney. You know, I care about my church. I believe in the gospel, and you know, hey, I'd like the brethren to pray, you know, about ordaining women. And you look at those two situations, and it's like we're gonna excommunicate one and the other. Nothing.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like she made any missteps?
Well, I think people, you know, people have gone back and forth about that and how her and ordained women tactically approached, you know, the situation. And I'm not here to say, you know, whether she did or she didn't. I hope that, you know, I just hope and pray that some good hopefully comes out of this, and I wish her all the best. I think she's just a great person, an impressive person, and you know, to be excommunicated, that's a hard situation to carry. It's hard for me not having a temple recommend, you
mm-hmm.
know. But for her to have that, the most severe disciplinary measure, you know, thrown at her, that's got to be just unbelievably difficult. And I know it's really probably been a major wound for her. And I just pray for her and her family, and hope she's doing okay.
I can tell you from the perspective of someone who has been excommunicated and come back to the church, it's about the most miserable thing an individual can go through.
I didn't know that with you. I did not know that.
Yeah, I was excommunicated in, give me a second, quick math in my head. I want to say it was February of 2003 and rebaptized in December of 2011.
Well, I am super happy that you are back in the Mormon community. I love your podcast. I think I just enjoy listening to you and the Cultural Hall. It's a wonderful, wonderful, informative and fun podcast. I think it's great.
Thank you very much. There's three questions, as you know, that we got to ask you before you get out of here. Do you have a calling right now?
I don't have a calling right now. While this is kind of going on, I've kind of withdrawn from that. So I'm just attending sacrament, meeting with my family. We'll see kind of how things play out. And, you know, I attend priesthood, you know, off and on, you know, a couple times a month. So no calling for me right now.
If you could pick
between callings,
if you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or one that you make up, what would it be?
Well, I was teaching Sunday school, so I really loved, you know, I love teaching, and, you know, I was an early morning seminary teacher for 4 years. I don't know that I'd probably want to do that again, but
yeah, that sounds early.
That's a tough one, but yeah, I really enjoyed teaching Sunday school, or I'd love to teach primary with my wife, or, you know, even be in the nursery. It's, you know, those are just awesome callings, I think.
Final question is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
My favorite part of our faith is the pioneer heritage. The archetype of us having that exodus across the plains into the Salt Lake Valley, you know, just being on the forefront, the cutting edge, coming into a place that, wow, I wonder if people can even live here or survive here. And, you know, kind of from nothing to build things up where it seemed impossible. For me, that's informed myself as an LGBT ally, where it seemed like, you know, there was this wasteland and there's these early, early pioneers who are starting to, you know, stand up and be allies. And those who are LGBT Mormons who are so brave and being open about who they are, that pioneer heritage really, really speaks to me, both on a, you know, family history level, on a spiritual religious level, and then also in my the LGBT activism that I do.
It's Kevin Klusterman, a former bishop of the LDS Church and a LGBT ally in the Midwest. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And I'm sorry that it took 3 years for us to get connected. The first time that I asked Kevin to be here in the Cultural Hall was in the fall of 2011. But I think it's an appropriate time to have you now, and I think it worked out the way that it should. Thanks for being here. We hope that this has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week. And in the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row. We read.